retribution?
I think so to a certain extent, and sort of in ascending and descending order. I think the retribution is so vast. It's like every day somebody else is being investigated by the Justice Department, or, you know, the grand jury is discussing this. And a lot of people, the names are not completely familiar to people that have followed it all along and kind of know and that kind of stuff. So I think that's less, has less juice, if you will, in the American public than some of the others that you see. I think there's starting to be some sink in with, obviously, the tariffs, which I thought for a while, are people going to, when nothing had sort of happened yet, they just had been imposed and it was a big argument. I people didn't feel it, so it didn't, his numbers were still okay. And then once people, like, talking about the small businesses, mm-hmm. started to feel it, it became sort of more widespread. But I think other things sort of take precedence, and honestly, it depends on the week. Like, what has happened in some ways, and I think this is completely personal on the part of the Trump administration, things come up. I think Epstein obviously has legs. It always has. And it has legs in places that hurt him, and that's his base. So there is, I think that's an exception to, well, there's this and there's this and there's that. But I do think, you know, over time, it's, you know, like water on a rock. It begins to make a difference.
Right. Our number is 844-4MIDDLE. That is 844-464-3353. Or, of course, you can reach out online at listentothemiddle.com. And Tolliver, some people are already doing that. What are you hearing?
Yeah, Fernando in St. Louis says, my yearly bonus was the leanest of my life. Kelly in Minneapolis says, my city is currently overrun with overzealous, untrained, armed racists. And Chris writes from Latin America, my response to the Trump administration's policies was to leave the country. I did so for my own safety. So, a lot coming in.
Because so many people, after the election, a lot of people did say they were going to do that, but I haven't seen personally so many actually do that, but apparently Chris did. Tolliver, what are we listening to here?
This is Kendrick Lamar with TV Off. So he performed this at the Super Bowl. And, you know, it was a very patriotic performance that all Americans could rally around. You remember that, right, Jeremy?
right when Trump came in. Right.
More great calls coming up on the middle.
Second bat, but somebody gotta do it. Got my foot up on the gas, but somebody gotta do it. Huh. Turn this TV off, turn this TV off. Huh. Turn this TV off, turn this TV off. Huh. Turn this TV off, turn this TV off. Huh. Turn this TV off, turn this TV off.
Crazy, scary, spooky, hilarious. 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 Crazy, scary, spooky.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, and always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday evening. KPR continues to expand its news coverage because of support from more than 6,000 listeners just like you. In-depth reporting matters so much to our members that they're willing to spend 10 or 20 or even more every month to ensure the service continues to grow. Their support matters, and so does yours. Take a minute and go to kansaspublicradio.org to donate today. Thank you for your support of KPR. A chance of flurries tonight in northeast and east central Kansas. A low of 10 degrees, wind chills between 0 and 5. Partly sunny for Monday with a high of 25. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show. We're focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. And this hour, we're asking you how the first year of Trump's second presidency has affected you personally. Tolliver, what is the number to call in?
It's 844-4-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also write to us at listentothemiddle.com or on social media.
All right, let's get to the phones because they're lighting up. Devin is calling in from Brewster, New York. Devin, go ahead. How has the first year of Trump's presidency affected you?
Hey, Jeremy. How are you doing?
Good.
Hello? Yeah, it's good. Yeah, well, look, at the grocery store, simply at the grocery store, the meat prices is absolutely ridiculous. I have to settle for, I like a certain type of meat, and I can't even afford it. I have to get a meat that costs lower, you know, at a lower cost. I mean, the grocery prices are just so high that I can't even shop. I can't stay on my budget, you know? Mm. And then just two more things with the, it's affecting my mental health with the executive overreach, the policies, like with the trying to cut funding for sanctuary cities or trying to indict, like Candy was saying, trying to indict this person, trying to indict that person. And, you know, it's just a mess. It's just a mess.
It's affecting your mental health. Yeah. It's raising your blood pressure. Yeah, and right. Well, at least you can't afford the beef. So maybe that's better. But anyway, Devin, thank you. Thank you very much for that. Philip Bailey, on the first point, that the issue of the cost of things at the supermarket, you know, the Trump administration likes to say right now that they're coming down, but people can see with their own eyes what's happening.
And that's the thing about the American economy, you know, Jeremy, when politicians and academics can use these sort of larger macro yardsticks, but Americans get to every day look at the gas prices, look at grocery prices and say, I'm not feeling that. And look, Donald Trump, again, made a bunch of broad promises on everything from energy costs, reducing grocery prices to inflation. In fact, 2 days ago, I believe in Michigan, he declared that inflation was defeated. But in fact, right, current inflation, about 2.7%, is virtually unchanged from the 2.8% rate when he first his first full month in office. Mm. So look, when people deal with the economy, I think one thing that, you know, I've talked to different sources on, you know, Heritage Foundation, Brookings Institution, I asked them, is it wise for presidents to still make it seem like they control or can influence the American economy? And I think that Donald Trump is going to learn this year, particularly in the midterms, because now Democrats have basically seized his argument that the president doesn't care about you. He's not talking about, you know, your grocery prices. He's more concerned about building a ballroom in the White House. And even Republicans, including former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, are saying, look, President Trump and some of the Republicans on their side have sort of lost the plot on this. And that was the whole essence, really, of America First and Make America Great Again, was dealing with the hard, you know, pocketbook issues for working class Americans.
Hmm. David is calling in from Swan Valley, Idaho. David, go ahead with your thoughts about Trump's first year. How's it affecting you?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I drive about 50 or 60,000 miles a year. I'm a traveling music teacher, and it was pretty frustrating during the previous administration as gas prices just went skyrocketing and inflation was out of control, mainly because of all the government overspending. And then I'm not a fan of Donald Trump per se, but as cutting has, or costs, he's cut spending, and he's pushed for cutting spending, and he's pushed for policies that would help gas prices come down, and indeed they have come down a lot. And so it's really made a big difference for me and my business to not have that out-of-control government spending making all those prices go through the roof.
Well, and David, gas prices have come down, but have you seen prices go up in other places, like Philip was saying, with energy costs just at home or in your business?
Well, we have good energy costs where we are. We get it out of northern Star Valley, Wyoming. Mm. It stayed pretty stable growth throughout the last many years.
So not too bad for you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but 200% inflation on one item that I use a lot was pretty tough. And as it came down, that really improved my bottom line a lot.
Yeah. So you're happy about those gas prices. Candy Crowley, it's funny. You think about all the years in the past when that is one of the biggest issues leading into an election is the gas prices.
Right. And sort of getting back a little bit to what Philip said, presidents can tinker around the edges of an economy, but it seems to me that, then I'm not an economist and I won't play one here, but you know, it seems to me that the economy has a role of its own, and certain things from the outside and from the inside affect it more than a president does. I mean, I think oil prices is a pretty good example. There are a lot of different reasons that oil has come down, and less about policy than about circumstance. So he is lucky in that. He's not lucky in the beef prices. He's not lucky in a number of other, with coffee and some other things I saw today.
Which are connected to the tariffs, by the way, too. I think that's one of the reasons why he tried to exempt those things from his tariffs, because he saw that the prices were going up.
Right, exactly. So I think, you know, obviously it depends on what you buy and what you need. And I do think there are people, I mean, you know, if you're on, got a lot of your money on Wall Street, you are happy as can be.
Right.
So, you know, there's a yin and a yang.
Yeah. Alejandro is in San Antonio, Texas. Alejandro, what about you? How's the Trump administration affecting you personally?
Well, you know, I am a recovering addict. Not only am I a recovering addict, but I've worked in the industry. And I have heard hundreds of people in clinics around San Antonio have lost the medication that they need to stay sober because of the cuts. Now, I know that Trump said that he declared war on addiction, but he's doing a lot of things to the opposite. Now, I've been sober for 4 going on 5 years, so I am better off than a lot of people that I see who are getting cut off their methadone and their Suboxone, and there's the likelihood that they're going to be able to stay sober is very small, and I am predicting a large increase in overdoses.
Alejandro, thank you for calling in and telling us that. Philip Bailey, there have been huge cuts to so many programs, to nonprofit organizations that deal with things like addiction under the Trump administration. And Alejandro says it's going to really start to be seen.
Well, look, I think along with the DOGE cuts earlier or late last year back in 2025, but that along with the One Big Beautiful Bill where we saw, you know, these immense tax cuts for people who are in the 1%, people who are doing very, very well, high-income earners. At the same time, a lot of these cuts to programs basically for the poor. Now, Donald Trump has not touched a penny in Social Security, but he has signed legislation that makes significant cuts to Medicaid and other safety net programs. So that, along with the dismantling of key institutions, key agencies in the federal government, that a lot of people, including MAGA voters, right, when people think about food stamps, for example, they may want to think about Keisha and Jamal in Harlem or Southside Chicago, but you need to be thinking about Billy Bob and Sue Ann in Hazard, Kentucky, and parts of rural Arkansas and West Virginia. That's who the folks who are most dependent on those safety net programs. And you saw Republicans, some like Josh Hawley, senator from Missouri, make that point. And I think that's where I began to really see, you know, the Trump coalition begin to erode. And that's another feature, I think, of President Donald Trump in this past year, is that he really very quickly and rapidly sort of eroded his own base on a number of fronts internationally, but definitely domestically. And as the caller spoke to, those working class white voters who turned their votes over to Donald Trump got kicked in the teeth in terms of the cuts to those safety programs that a lot of them rely on.
You know, Candy Crowley, the Republicans have really stayed in lockstep in Congress with the president. Do you see that changing as we get closer to the midterm elections, especially as there have been some special elections that have scared Republicans?
Yeah, we're seeing little bits and pieces on various things, Greenland in particular, just because there are Republicans who find that outrageous and have begun to speak on Capitol Hill. I think erosion will start after the primaries. I think that's the, you know, if you're going to start breaking away, because there's so many Republicans that the primaries really the election, because we're so, you know, the red and the blue are so stable that, you know, if you can challenge and beat your primary opponent, if you're conservative, if you can beat someone more conservative, you're going to win the election. So in most cases,
right.
not in purple states. So I think the demarcation will be after the primaries and after these guys are assured that they're going to be able to run again. And I think then you'll begin to see some breakaway.
Nikki is calling in from Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Nikki. What about you? How has Trump's first year affected you personally?
So I would say there's been three things specifically. One is my family's on the Affordable Care Act, and it is more than doubled. The other one is that I had some employees, or not employees, but coworkers, and they were from Mexico. They'd been here for over a decade, but they chose very early on in 2025 to move their entire family back because they had an adult child with special needs, and they could not risk being you know, taken away and not knowing the, you know, status of their child. And then
they
the third
self-deported,
one is
like you're saying.
Ability. Yeah, they absolutely did. The other one is just, I've never thought that in my lifetime I would have to consider to what extent I would be wanting to put myself in danger and my family to then protect those who have, who are in danger and whose voices aren't being heard. And like very much like Anne Frank and the Holocaust and being growing up on that, I never thought I would be there in my country.
And you feel like you're doing
but
that
I
now?
I feel like I am. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, especially after last week with the you know, the shots to Renee Good.
Renee Nicole Good, yeah.
It's very much, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Nikki, thank you very much for that call. A lot there, Philip, on a lot of different things that we've been talking about. But I'm glad that she brought up the ACA because this is something that has just happened. People's rates for insurance have gone way up. There's still a question about whether Congress is going to do something about it.
And I think, well, as Candy mentioned earlier, as we see Republicans, and I think she's right, we'll see this pick up maybe after the primaries. We saw around 17 House Republicans break with party leadership. And while we have this conversation, Jeremy, going on about President Trump's first year in office, I think we should also look at Congress and the Republican caucuses in both chambers. You haven't really seen, as until lately, these Republican members breaking with party leadership on numerous issues, not just the Epstein files, but now on the ACA subsidies over on the Senate side, on the Venezuelan War Powers Resolution, even though that was ultimately defeated. So you are seeing Republicans wise up to the fact that, look, they're going to be on the ballot when Donald Trump is not going to be on the ballot. Mm. And I think they're coming to that realization. Let's remember, after the impeachment of Donald Trump, many of those handful of Republicans who voted for that impeachment were picked off one at a time. We, of course, know Liz Cheney from Wyoming. She lost that primary battle. It should be interesting to see these Republicans who bucked Donald Trump this go-round, like Congressman Thomas Massey here in my home state of Kentucky, and Trump has endorsed his opponent. It's not the first time he's had problems with Congressman Massey, who has survived those challenges before. But it'll be interesting to see if Donald Trump still has that strength in the Republican base in those primary elections. I suspect that a lot of his more populist-minded folks who he brought into the Republican Party, again, are not very happy with him on some of these mm-hmm. domestic issues and may buck him and support those candidates, to support those incumbents that he's against.
Hmm. Well, and a lot of people that have gone against him have decided that they're out, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Tillis, the senator of North Carolina, is leaving. Mitch McConnell, not a big fan of Donald Trump. He's done after the end of this term. Let's go to Andy, who's in Denver, Colorado. Andy, what about you? How has the first year affected you personally?
The first year has affected me so deeply and my family because my child is trans. And the full weight of the federal government has tried to deny the existence of trans as a way of living. And our whole world was turned upside down very recently when HHS told clinics that they could not allow treatment of youth under the age of 18 if they took, federal money. We all of a sudden within 24 hours had no treatment. There is no standard of care for how you stop or reverse or delay this treatment. And so it threw our whole world into a complete spin cycle to replace this care. And, you know, going from the very specific to the very general, you know, we started the term in a world where we recognized each other for our differences. And all of a sudden we have been bully pulpited and legislated out of our very identity. Stunning.
Yeah. Andy, thank you for that. Candy Crowley, it's possible that no group of people, I mean, we've talked about immigrants, obviously, that has been a real target of the Trump administration, but so have trans people in this country. And we heard that very personally there from Andy.
Yeah, the cultural side of it has been cruel. And there is no, I think that does also affect people who don't have a trans child or any in the LGBT community, but understand, you know, that we are a nation that's supposed to be welcoming and supposed to be diverse, that are also offended by this. So that, I mean, I think the cultural issues don't turn around easily, But they, I do think that the longer you go on and the more people you meet, and then you watch what really has been cruelty, it begins to really bother you. And I think it's one of those things that belongs on where the wave comes, the undercurrent still being the economy. And I think that the ACA also folds into that, because it's not just the people who can't afford, as the previous woman talked about. It's not just them. It's like, what next? It's that anxiety, because if people don't have insurance, they show up in the emergency rooms. If they show up in the emergency rooms of public hospitals, they get their whatever it is they need. And now they're sicker because they haven't had health care. Mm-hmm. What happens? The hospitals raise their prices. What happens after that? The insurance companies raise their prices on all the other kinds of insurance that people have. And they also make smaller what they cover. So there's so much on that one thread of health care. And who's allowed to have health care? I think it's very much the same with the abortion issue. And I think that the country, despite how it voted last time, when you see the polling, the country is still left of center than the elections would have you believe. And so I think this kind of thing does have an effect.
Mm. Tolliver, we have comments coming in online. By the way, the phone lines are completely full, yeah. But I'm sure that there is a lot coming in on the website as well.
So much. Aisha in Ogden says, I lost my job at the IRS in February. I'm in the lowest paying job I've been in since being a teenager, and I'm currently facing homeless housing. Katrina in Carbondale says, my parents rely on Medicaid, and my mom can no longer work full time due to cancer. Lucy in Grand Rapids says, besides the anguish and pain over what's happening to our communities, I can't afford health care now. I live below the poverty level and lost my food benefits. It's an FU sandwich, and it's a war on the poor and ethnic cleansing.
Well, thank you for not pulling a Mayor Fry on me and actually using the F word in the commentary, because the FCC is listening very closely. Tolliver, what are we listening to here?
This is the OJs with For the Love of Money, which is the famous The Apprentice theme song, which, in case you forgot, was hosted by Donald Trump before he was a politician, the way we were. More of your calls coming up on The Middle.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. 91.5 Lawrence, 91.3 Junction City, and always online at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday evening. We invite you to celebrate 30 years of music that's shaken, not stirred, when KPR presents the Retro Cocktail Hour's 30th Anniversary Weekend on February 27th and 28th. Join us for the Jet Setter Jazz of Nutty plus Exotica Cocktail, performing the music of Martin Denny and Les Baxter. For a complete schedule and tickets, just visit kansaspublicradio.org. Tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, a chance of flurries, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 10, with wind chills between 0 and 5. For Monday, partly sunny with highs in the mid-20s. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. This hour, we're asking how the first year of Trump's second presidency has impacted you personally. I'm joined by USA Today chief political correspondent Philip Bailey and former CNN chief political correspondent Candy Crowley. You can call in at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or you can write to us at listentothemiddle.com. Let's go right back to the phones. Nathaniel is in Chicago. Hi, Nathaniel. What about you? How has the first year impacted you?
Hi, good evening. Ever since election, I noticed a serious change in discourse and people willing to accept conservative views. I'm a college student, and the majority of people disagree with me, which is fine, but I've noticed that I don't have to hide my opinions and be shamed for them, or conservative opinions aren't considered extreme or radical anymore. And I very much appreciate that. Complete difference since the election.
How conservative are you, would you say, Nathaniel?
Pretty conservative. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like all right. 70%.
Yeah. Are you happy? Is there anything that Trump has done that you're not happy with, or are you happy with all of it?
Oh no. There's definitely things I don't like. Foreign policy, for one. I don't like to see the brutality in the streets. I don't like that, as it might be necessary, maybe not. But I very much appreciate the cultural change, or parts of it.
Yeah. Interesting. Nathaniel, thank you very much for that. Philip, it's interesting. Some people would say that the discourse has gotten much worse, but for this conservative college student in Chicago, he says it's getting better.
Well, I think that, you know, look, Donald Trump, when he entered into politics, one thing he wasn't was G-rated. And he certainly, and I think a lot of his supporters, and I think Democrats were caught flat-footed on this, the word policing, what they would describe as sort of the woke culture of the Biden era and around that time, you hear from a lot of folks, not just college students who have a more conservative bent, but even, you know, more progressive-minded folks sort of speak up now and say, look, I didn't feel comfortable talking about trans rights or these issues for fear of being maligned or pushed aside or canceled, right? Mm. And as overblown as that might be for some individuals, I do think that it did teach Democrats a lesson, and they're basically adopting it now, having more open dialogue, having conversations in spaces and places that they're usually not comfortable in historically. And I think that, you know, Democrats got caught flat-footed there. But over the past 10 years that Donald Trump's been in our politics, and we've seen the coarsening of that discourse and out of the behavior of the president himself, who just recently flipped off, right, a Ford worker at the factory in Michigan. I don't think you would ever have seen Barack Obama or George W. Bush. I don't even think Richard Nixon, all right, in public would do something that way. So we've really seen the professional wrestling element of Donald Trump's persona really impact our politics. And I don't think that a lot of Democrats are still on that page of, oh, let's go back to the way it was before. But I do think, you know, this is also a president who, by the way, has been through two assassination attempts himself. Right. We saw Charlie Kirk last year in that heinous act of violence. So conservatives themselves have an interest in lowering the temperature because they're also being impacted by political violence and some of this coarsening rhetoric.
You know, I remember, I don't know why this is sticking in my head, but it was a big story when George W. Bush, as president, called reporter Adam Clymer a major league a-hole for the New York Times. He used the real word. And that was a big story. Now, you know, people just flip people off. They use the F-word, F-bomb all the time. Okay. Sam is calling in from New York City. Sam, go ahead. How has the first year of the second Trump administration affected you personally?
Hi, thanks for letting me on. So, so I'm an artist in the New York City, moved here to be an artist, and things have completely changed. I had to go corporate this year for the first time in my life. The National Endowment for the Arts has completely changed, and it's really caught a loss of funding and sort of a chilling effect on programming throughout regional theaters as well as national theaters. Of course, like the renaming of the Kennedy Center caused a lot of programs to leave the Kennedy Center. And because of that, there are so many opportunities for emerging and middle career artists disappearing. They've disappeared.
Huh. Do you think that that's going to be long lasting, Sam, or do you think that it's going to come back?
I you know, that's a hard question. I'm really not sure. I mean, just for an example, like I do a lot of children's theater. And a lot of theaters are just going for the Velveteen Rabbit now, right? They're not going for things that are new. They're just, they don't want to take any chances or risks. It's a very risky time to be in theater, especially with it's just a risky time. And I do think there's going to have long lasting effects on a lot of artists leaving the artist workforce.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam. Candy, I'm so glad that we heard from an artist because that's a huge story all by itself.
It is. And it, one of the things that, that has encapsulated it, I do think, is the changing of the name of the Kennedy Center. The Peace Building in Washington also was a big deal here. I'm not sure a lot of people
knew. Institute for Peace.
About that. The Institute for Peace is now the Trump Institute for Peace, I think. Right. I can't remember the official name, but it has Trump in it. And I think those things And what's happened with the Kennedy Center is you do have a lot of artists that are going, yeah, we're not coming. You had the opera recently for a variety of reasons that Washington Opera has left and is going elsewhere, though we don't know where yet, I don't think. So I think that the big things that happen are the naming of a building. You think, why would anybody care about the naming of a building in Washington? Was the John F. Kennedy Center, so it's like iconic. And I think those things have a lot of the East Wing getting destroyed overnight and wanting to build a second story in the West Wing. I think those things do affect the public because they have some ownership in those places. So it's easy to understand, and it seems a little egotistical, and I think people don't like that.
David is calling in from Kalamazoo, Michigan. David, what about you? How has the first year affected you?
Hey, so I am a teacher, and I have had the privilege of watching students react to the Trump presidency through several years, and one thing I've noticed is that at the high school level, the conservative students, the students who are big fans of Trump, have always been more vocal. And there has been, for the first time in a long time, a shift in that in the last couple of years. Specifically in the last couple of months, I just gave an assignment, and the assignment was a response to Paul Rusesabagina's novel, An Ordinary Man, which is about the Rwandan genocide, and students have to compare it to something happening in their own life. And time again, the essays rolled in comparing the current ICE situation to, the Rwandan genocide.
Wow.
And so students as young as 15, 16, 17 years old are taking note of this. And for the first time in a really long time, there is anger and frustration and vocality among my liberal and middle ground students. So that's been fascinating to watch. It's interesting. I stay neutral, of course, but that has been what I've seen on the ground in schools.
Yeah. David, thank you very much. And I'm glad you brought that up. And I want to, before we go to our guests here, before we lose this caller who's calling in from Minneapolis, I would like to get to Ramona. Ramona, what about you? You're right in the middle of it right now.
Yeah, this is a really stressful time in Minneapolis. I live close to Northeast Minneapolis and close to downtown. And I just, a lot of the people I know and within me just feel a constant stress of ICE, coming in and taking people and breaking car windows and just all the violence that's come upon us. And I don't feel like we deserve that in Minneapolis. It seems to me like Trump is saying violence is okay because he's putting violence on Minneapolis and expecting us to back off, and people want to push back. We don't want this in our city. We love our neighbors. So there's that. And I guess the second thing would be the economy is, he hasn't helped the economy at all. I guess the stock market is not everything. That's one point I want to make.
Yeah.
So when you're judging how the economy is, he often brings up the stock market is doing great. I don't know what your problem is. And a lot of people can't get into the stock market, and right. We're working our butts off out here and carrying, like most of my life, I did full-time jobs or two jobs as a single mother. And I just feel real oppressed myself.
Let me just ask you quickly, Ramona, what do you think is going to make the situation in Minneapolis calm down?
I think if ICE backs off, if the Supreme Court could okay some legislation to, not pass the Insurrection Act and, to call those ICE agents out, or maybe make their group smaller, like have 5 ICE agents try to apprehend one person instead of like 50.
Right, there have been a lot out there in those situations.
It's a military presence that's really scary.
Ramona, thank you very much for calling in. And Candy Crowley, so much there, but we heard her mention the courts there, and that has been one of the main ways that the opponents of Trump have been trying to stop the things that he's doing that they don't like.
Yeah, and I think what's frustrating to people, I hear this all the time, is it's so slow. And we're used to, like tomorrow, this court's going to decide, and then the court decides, and then there's another appeal, and then it goes to another court, and then it ends up in the Supreme Court, and it's got 18 cases. And I think that, but they've been the one backstop that you can point to that has said, yeah, no, you can't do this. But the president has also won a number of Supreme Court cases. So I think there's frustration with this, the slowness of the judiciary, which has always been deliberately so that there's a total fairness inside the system, and at least that was the idea. But it's a final word usually, but it takes a while to get there, and I think that keeps the anxiety as Ramona had keeps it going.
David from Adirondack Park, New York, has been on the line for a long time, so let me get to him. David, what about you? What do you have to say?
Well, like I told your call screener, I am absolutely delighted with just about everything the president's been doing. And I could probably speak to any issue you want to bring up, but the one that I mentioned to the call screener off the top of my head was the arrest of Nicolas Maduro was a little bit of justice for myself, my family, and my deceased son, who was sold illegal drugs, who was in the country illegally, and caused his death.
And do you believe that the Maduro capture was about drugs? Because there have been a lot of reasons put out there for why that happened.
Yeah, I do believe that. That's what he acted on, so that's what I believe.
And that's what you believe. David, thank you very much for that. Philip, the foreign policy issues that have come up, you wonder how many people are personally affected by them. Obviously, so many Venezuelan Americans, especially in the state of Florida, very happy about what happened.
Right. And I think when it depends on the context and the region of the world we're talking about. But as Donald Trump has flexed his foreign policy muscles in America's backyard in South America, I think it should be pointed out, number one, the sacking of Nicolas Maduro still leaves in that regime, for the most part, which is still intact in Venezuela. And this is what Donald Trump, I think, is really good at. And I think that last caller encapsulates why he's been so successful in electoral politics. Donald Trump knows how to identify what your grievance is and say, I'm going to take some immediate action. Even if it's something that a prior president and a predecessor wouldn't even dream of doing it, I'm going to do it because I'm here to serve you. So when you talk to, Trump supporters in that 36% still about what's going on in Minneapolis and what's going on with the crackdown on immigration, and you show them some of the more brutal images of ICE, they say, well, look, what about Lake and Riley? What about American citizens who've been killed by people who are in this country illegally? Trump speaks to that grievance, I think, in a way that Democrats got caught flat-footed on. Even on the cultural issues, you hear a lot of your callers, Jeremy, talking about Nazi Germany or the genocide in Rwanda. All you got to do is talk to older black Americans, and they'll tell you that this is not new to American history and new to our government or our country here. Think about Emmett Till. Think about lynchings. Think about the treatment of African Americans historically in this country. So a more authoritarian-minded, robust executive that sort of is testing the limits of its power against both Congress and the Supreme Court isn't unprecedented in American history. I think it just might be unprecedented for a certain generation of liberals who weren't accustomed to a president or a Republican president acting in this way.
Hmm. How about Jared in Kansas City, Kansas? Jared, what about you? How has the first year of Trump's second term affected you?
Yeah, so I think the biggest effect that I've seen hasn't been personally for me, because I think we can talk all day about the effects on paper, whether it be the economy or with his domestic policy in terms of immigration. But I really think that America in the past has stood as a talisman for democracy, right? As a flag of freedom that has stood strong through 9/11, through the Cold War, through everything, right? And I think that when you see some of the cutbacks to foreign aid, like USAID getting slashed, or other very critical actions that Trump has taken to sort of sully the name of America on the global stage. I think that will be a very long-lasting and damaging effect of his presidency.
Hmm. Jared, thank you very much for that. Candy, just the image of America under Trump and people around the world, but for Americans who have always been brought up thinking that we're the good guys.
It's interesting because what you hear either on the radio or the TV or among your friends is, this is not who we are, at least the people who are opposed to a lot of the things that President Trump is doing. That phrase keeps coming up. This is not who we are. You look at these streets, you look at the kinds of things that ICE is doing with the broken windows and the, it doesn't even mention the murder in Minneapolis. So it is not our viewpoint of ourselves. Our viewpoint is we send through USAID a whole bunch of medicine and food, and that's how we see our better selves. And that's how a lot of people see our better selves. And it seems to have disappeared, and that makes people question the identity of the country.
Not just that, but Philip, right as we speak right now, a number of the U.S.'s NATO allies are sending troops to Greenland out of fear that the United States is going to invade.
I think if there's one thing, Jeremy, that Donald Trump's lasting legacy would be, that I don't think, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, the next president is going to have to deal with, is America's allies, its friends across the globe, have a different perception of America now. And it's about some of our chief allies, like old Europe, Western Europe, European allies, who are now realizing that you can't rely on America, that these elections in our country can impact their security, their national security, their international security. So whether or not Donald Trump decides to seize Greenland and take it for the United States, whether that happens with Ukraine and that war with Russia, one thing I think will be a lasting legacy is European nations and other U.S. allies are going to look at themselves and say, there is a world in which America may not be on the world stage as our partner. And that World War II coalition that America lived off of for 60, 70 plus years, I think that's going to be the lasting legacy of the Trump era, which is that America's allies, its friends, look at America differently. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both, USA Today Chief Political Correspondent Philip Bailey and former CNN Chief Political Correspondent Candy Crowley. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy, as always.
And next week, we are going to be asking you what can be done to restore trust in science, which took a hit after the COVID pandemic and is further eroded because of high-profile science skeptics in positions of power in Washington. You can reach out at listentothemiddle.com. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next week.
Support for The Middle with Jeremy Hobson on KPR comes from the Dole Institute of Politics, hosting former Archivist of the United States Colleen Shogan at the Elizabeth Dole Women in Leadership Lecture, January 29th at 7 p.m. More at doleinstitute.org. And Cromwell Environmental, providing solutions for mold, asbestos, and other indoor environmental quality issues since 1982, for clients ranging from private homeowners and realtors to corporations. More information at CromwellEnvironmental.com. From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, KANQ Chanute, and always online at KansasPublicRadio.org.
Hey, it's A. Martinez. Checking the news these days might feel like a lot, but staying informed should be approachable.
So what's the situation there like now?
It should give you perspective.
What to you is the most significant thing that Pope Francis did?
And really, sometimes it should make you smile.
Apparently there are also therapy llamas. Of course, NPR is all over the story.
This is NPR.
Here's a look at the KPR weather forecast. It's 40 and cloudy. Wind is from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight clear with a low in the low teens. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the upper 20s. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night clear with a low in the mid-teens. Wind will be from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. It's 40 and cloudy. That's KPR weather.
You're listening to the Retro Cocktail Hour.
That's Mr. Ho's Orchestratica with Juan Esquivel's Miniskirt on the Retro Cocktail Hour. It's from the Unforgettable Sounds of Esquivel, recorded in 2010. This is the Retro Cocktail Hour, where the music is always shaken, not stirred. Apparently, that's not great for martinis, but it's just right for music. I'm Daryl Brogdon. We're together again here at the Underground Martini Bunker. In the hour ahead, we'll hear some classic exotica by the Gene Rains Group and by Ima Sumac. There's also new tunes by the Waitiki Seven and the Tiki Yaki Orchestra. Plus, Les Baxter from Soul of the Drums. We visit a forbidden tiki hut, and there's a big noise from Watusi. We respectfully ask for the presence of your company at our hallucination. We call it the Retro Cocktail Hour. On Kansas Public Radio. Thank you. That's drummer Nick Fatul, Big Noise from Watusi, on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Nick Fatul played with a lot of big bands, and for many years with Bob Crosby's Bobcats. This tune is kind of a takeoff on Big Noise from Winnetka, which was created by bassist Bob Haggart and drummer Ray Baduke in 1938. Before that, accordion virtuoso Charles Camilleri with Jungle Fantasy. It's on the album Spectacular Accordions. Camilleri was primarily a classical composer, but early in his career he played the accordion, and he did this record for MGM in 1960. Still to come, Ima Sumac with music for Headhunters. Right now, though, it's the Gene Rains Group from an album called Rains in the Tropics. He did a handful of Exotica records for the Decca label in the early 1960s. Here's a tune composed by Les Baxter, Shadow of Love, on the Retro Cocktail Hour and KPR. Eddie Warner and his orchestra with a young Lalo Schifrin at the piano for El Gato Negro on the Retro Cocktail Hour. When Lalo Schifrin was in his early 20s, he studied at the Conservatory of Paris and he played in jazz clubs by night. He picked up work as an arranger, composer, and pianist with Eddie Warner's Tropical Orchestra. Also, Ima Sumac and Salma, which apparently means magic. It's on Ima's album Legend of the Jíbaro, recorded in 1957, and supposedly inspired by the music of the Jíbaro people, a tribe of headhunters in South America. Thanks for digging the tunes here at the Underground Martini Bunker, which is home of the Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Daryl Brogdon, and coming up, the fantastic sounds of organist Eddie Baxter. Next, Gerald Wilson and his orchestra. He was a trumpeter first and played with the fabulous Jimmy Lunsford Band. Later, he led his own big band and worked with artists like Duke Ellington, Billie Holiday, and Ray Charles. Here's the band with Algerian Fantasy on the Retro Cocktail Hour from KPR.
Thank you. This is the Retro Cocktail Hour.
I told you it was a bad idea to come here.
A production of Kansas Public Radio.
Support for the Retro Cocktail Hour on KPR comes from Theater Lawrence, presenting The Mountaintop, exploring legacy and mortality through the life of Martin Luther King Jr., showing January 30th through February 8th. Details at theaterlawrence.com. That's organist Eddie Baxter with Miser Lou. It's from 1963 in the album The Fantastic Sounds of Eddie Baxter on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Eddie was the organist for The Continental, an early 50s TV series, and later did a bunch of albums for Dot Records in the early and mid-1960s. Glad you could join us here at the Underground Martini Bunker for yet another session featuring the sounds of space-age pop and incredibly strange music. In this half hour, there's a new one by the Waitiki Seven, plus Les Baxter's Soul of the Drums, and Tim Mayer with music from Tales of the Merman. It's all ahead in the next 30 minutes. The Retro Cocktail Hour is here every week on stations like KMUZ, Salem, Oregon, WHRV, Norfolk, Virginia, and Royalton Community Radio in South Royalton, Vermont. You can listen to the show anytime and on demand at mixcloud.com or at retrococktail.org.
Thank you.
That's something called Summer Theme, and it's by the Clay Pitts Orchestra on the Retro Cocktail Hour. This comes from a movie called Female Animal, made in 1970. Everything about this movie screams trashy European B-movie. But in fact, it was made by American filmmakers who were emulating the sound and style of those trashy European B-movies that were ubiquitous in the 1960s and 70s. Later in the hour, Les Baxter's album Soul of the Drums, done for Frank Sinatra's record label, plus something new by the Tiki Yaki Orchestra. Hey, speaking of new, here's one that's hot off the press, or whatever they say these days. It's by the Waitiki Seven, joined here by the great drummer Harold Chang, who was part of the Arthur Lyman Group for many years and is still with us. I saw him play Quiet Village with the Waitiki Seven at the Halukalani Hotel in Honolulu just a couple of years ago. This is the Waitiki Seven with Harold Chang and a tune that was big for Arthur Lyman in the 1960s, Yellowbird, on the Retro Cocktail Hour and KPR.
Leaving the car to an attendant, Brad and Penny walked toward the tiki hut. The throbbing surf began to cast its spell. Music and laughter drifted toward them as they wound their way up the crunchy path. For 10 years, Lincoln High graduates had reserved the tiki hut for their banquets. Penny had heard all about it at school. Polynesian atmosphere, exotic island cuisine, where else but the tiki hut?
the exotic sounds of the Tiki Yaki Orchestra from their new album Tone Control, and the Enchanted Sea, a tune made popular by the Islanders in the early 1960s. And here for you on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Ahead of that, Sunrise at Kowloon, done by Les Baxter and his orchestra. This is on Soul of the Drums, recorded for Frank Sinatra's Reprise Records in 1963. Also, Quiet Village 67, played by Theophile and Bernard. Their one and only record says they were the most exciting duo on the East Coast. I guess they weren't all that exciting because they only made one record. And we heard a bit of Teenage Diary, a film made in 1960 that belongs to a genre known as Christian scare films. In this one, one-time Miss America Vonda K. Van Dyke plays a teenager struggling with her love for her boyfriend. And at some point, they go on a date to the local tiki bar. Okay, here's one now by Tim Mayer, composed for the web series Tales of the Merman. This is Cal's Vibe on the Retro Cocktail Hour, Kansas Public Radio. there's music from the production library. It's called Flamingo Lounge, composed by William Bergman, and here on the Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Daryl Brogdon, coming at you from here at the Underground Martini Bunker. Our website is retrococktail.org. That's where you can look at playlists from past shows, join the mailing list, enter the CD giveaway, and maybe most importantly, stream the show on demand just about any time. Again, that's at retrococktail.org. And don't forget about our Facebook group with over 10,000 Retro Cocktail Hour fans worldwide. The link to join the Facebook group is at retrococktail.org. From the University of Kansas, it's your place to find the Retro Cocktail Hour and NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. We are KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Oldsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Listen online at kansaspublicradio.org, or better yet, just tell your smart speakers to play Kansas Public Radio. You'll want to stick around because we've got music by Raymond Scott and his orchestra. That's coming up next here on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Hey, it's Daryl Brogdon. Did you know KPR's Retro Cocktail Hour turns 30 this year? Turning 30 means worse hangovers and visible wrinkles, but it also means a party weekend here in Lawrence, Kansas, on February 27th and 28th. We've got concerts, cocktail parties, and more, and you're invited to join us. Check out the calendar of events and get your tickets now at kansaspublicradio.org.
You're listening to the Retro Cocktail Hour.
We'll be right back.
Yowza. That is Ferrante and Teicher, How High the Moon, here in the Retro Cocktail Hour. It's on an album they did in 1958 called Ferrante and Teicher with Percussion. Well, you're at the Underground Martini Bunker for another Retro Cocktail Hour, where the music is always served up shaken, not stirred. I'm Daryl Brogdon, and if you've got nowhere to be right about now, why not hang out here for some space-age pop and incredibly strange music. For example, in this hour, there's music for Beatniks by John Barry and others. We'll hear a cantata for Combo by Lalo Schifrin. There's Private Eye Jazz by Skip Martin and Bob Mercy, plus one of the wildest, weirdest experiments in sound you'll ever hear, Phil Moore's Portrait of Lita. You'll either love it or you'll think I've completely lost my mind. Maybe both. Doubting my own sanity since 1996. It's the Retro Cocktail Hour on Kansas Public Radio. That's Kenyon Hopkins and his orchestra, Chattanooga Choo Choo, here for you on the Retro Cocktail Hour. This is on the album Riding the Rails. It's from 1959. Before that, Bob Thompson from The Sound of Speed with Sub-Manhattan Blues. This is on a concept album that showcases many ways of travel, from trains to planes to rocket ships. Hey, welcome to the Retro Cocktail Hour, where in just a few we'll hear Skip Martin with some Private Eye jazz for TV's Mike Hammer. Right now, though, it's a vocal group known as the Zeniths. They were active in nightclubs in the late 1950s and early 60s. They only made one album called Making the Scene for Atlantic Records in 1961. Here's a song that was originally a boogie-woogie number and is considered an important precursor to rock and roll. This is Roll 'em, Pete, on the Retro Cocktail Hour and KPR.
I've got a girl that lives up on a hill.
She's got a chick or a head with a pad upon the hill.
I've got a girl that lives up on a hill.
She's a chill, you never will get a thrill.
She don't want me, but I love her still.
He's a drag to even want her still.
She's got eyes like diamonds, teeth shine like Fort Knox gold.
They say sparkle plenty.
She got eyes like diamonds, teeth shine like gold.
He's crazy about her and it really is.
Every time she kisses me, she sends my mellow soul.
It could be the guy's not to blame.
Baby, you're so beautiful, but you got to die,
yes,
one day.
Got to die one day.
Baby,
yes,
you're so beautiful, but you got to die one day.
You got to die one day.
Oh, what's the loving before you pass away?
Yes, you got to die one day.
Happy as baby boy.
Yes, we're gonna jump for joy.
My mom's gonna buy me a high dramatic kitty car.
Early in the morning, early in the morning, early in the morning, everybody's gonna shout, gonna shout.
Crying, yes, yes.
Yes.
Riff Blues, conducted by Skip Martin, on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Dave Kahn composed that tune, which was used on TV in the late 50s as the theme music for TV's Mike Hammer, based on the Private Eye character created by Mickey Spillane. In all, it was used for maybe, I don't know, 60 seconds on the TV show, but it was expanded considerably for this album, which is not really a soundtrack album, because other than Riff Blues, none of these tunes were ever featured in the show. Ahead of that one, the Big Jocks Orchestra, that's J-O-X, with something called Cut A Loose. No idea about this band. This appears to be the only record they ever made, which I realize is kind of a familiar refrain on this show. I'm Daryl Brogdon. This show is the Retro Cocktail Hour, where shortly we'll hear from the awesome singer Blossom Dearie. The Retro Cocktail Hour comes your way every week on stations all over the place, including WIUP, Indiana, Pennsylvania, WSKG Classical in Binghamton, New York, and the stations of Wyoming Public Radio. Stream the show on demand, anytime, at Mixcloud.com or at RetroCocktail.org. Zodiac Blues, composed by George Dunning for the movie Bell, Book, and Candle, and on the Retro Cocktail Hour. In this movie, the music's being played when we visit the Zodiac Club, a joint in New York City frequented by witches and warlocks. In the film, it's played by the trumpet-playing Candoli brothers Pete and Conti, guitarist Elik Baksik, John Williams at the electric harpsichord, and Jack Lemmon at the bongos. Thanks for stopping by at the Underground Martini Bunker for the Retro Cocktail Hour. In the next 30 minutes, we're going to dive into some music for beatniks, plus some blues by the great Harry James. That's all ahead, so keep it right here. Next is John Barry, early in his career as a film composer. Matter of fact, here's a tune from his very first film score for a movie called Beat Girl in 1960, starring singer Adam Faith. This is Beat for Beatniks. Dig it. On the Retro Cocktail Hour from KPR.
in, making the rounds, digging the sounds. I read Playboy magazine, 'cause I'm hip. I dig, I'm in step. When it was hip to be hip, I was hip. I don't blow, but I'm a fan. Look at me swing, ring-a-ding-ding. I even call my girlfriend man, I'm so hip. Every Saturday night, with my suit buttoned tight and my suede's on, I'm getting my kicks, watching arty French flicks with my shades on. I'm too much, I'm a gas. I am anything but middle class. When I hang around the band, popping my thumbs, digging the drums, squares don't seem to understand why I flip. They're not hip like I'm hip. I'm hip, I'm alive. I enjoy any joint where there's jive. I'm on top of every trend. Look at me go, vo-de-o-do. Bobby Darin knows my friend. I'm so hip. I'm hip, but not weird. Like you notice, I don't wear a beard. Beards were in, but now they're out. They had their day, now they're passé. Just ask me if you're in doubt, 'cause I'm hip. Now whatever the fads, and whatever the ads say, it's Neatsville. I'll be keeping abreast, out in front of the rest with Elitesville. 'Cause I'm cool as a cuke. I'm a cat, I'm a card, I'm a kook. I get so much out of life. Really I do, scuba-doo-boo. One more time, play Mac the Knife. Let her rip, I may flip, but I'm hip.
Skulls, I'm broadcasting.
On the Retro Cocktail Hour, a production of Kansas Public Radio.
Support for the Retro Cocktail Hour on KPR comes from Manhattan Arts Center, presenting Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery. A fast-paced comedy follows Sherlock as he attempts to crack the case. Running January 23rd through February 1st. Tickets at manhattanarts.org. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Full Circle Sustainability in Topeka, providing community education and events such as repair clinics that promote a circular economy for a more sustainable future. Details at FullCircleSustainability.org. That's by Lalo Schifrin, Cantata for Combo, on the Retro Cocktail Hour. This appears in the 1968 film Bullet, starring Steve McQueen. In the film, it was performed by a San Francisco band called Meridian West. Before that, Big Band Riff, done by Roger Roger. That is his real name, by the way. He was a conductor, band leader, and composer who worked under several different names. Several of his albums are very collectible. This tune was originally done for the Chapel Production Library in 1965. Finally, we heard from singer and pianist Blossom Deary with I'm Hip, composed in the mid-60s by Dave Frischberg and Bob Dureau. If I haven't said it recently, thank you for listening to the Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Darryl Brogdon, below ground, as usual, at that secret, undisclosed location we call the Underground Martini Bunker. Up ahead, Portrait of Lita, a deeply weird piece of music by Phil Moore. See, if you need more Retro Cocktail Hour in your life, and who doesn't, I got the prescription. Check out Retro Cocktail Radio, our 24/7 streaming channel, continuous episodes of the show. And you'll find the link at retrococktail.org. from an album called Wild About Harry. That's Harry James and his orchestra, Blues for Lovers Only. Here for you on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Still to come, we'll hear a tune composed by Johnny Richards for a movie that almost didn't get released, thanks to Fidel Castro. Next, though, it's something from the incredibly strange music department here at the Underground Martini Bunker. From 1958, it's the album Portrait of Lita, composed and conducted by Phil Moore. This is a weird one, but I love it. It's hard to describe, though. It's kind of a jazz symphonic concerto featuring the voice of Lita Onest. But Lita doesn't sing actual lyrics. It appears Phil Moore wrote for her voice as if she was another horn in the orchestra. And she moans, groans, shrieks, and yelps her way through this. The entire piece takes up an entire LP. So here's just a part of Portrait of Lita on the Retro Cocktail Hour and KPR.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, like Johnny Carson used to say, that is some weird, wild stuff. Phil Moore's Portrait of Lita, Part 2, featuring the voice of Lita Ahnest on the Retro Cocktail Hour. Like I said, hard to describe. It sounds like jazz from Mars, but it's a classic. This is the Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Thank you most kindly for hanging out with us here at the Underground Martini Bunker. But wait, there's more. We'll hear some private eye jazz by composer Bob Mercy on an album called Jazz from Great TV Shows. The jazz is pretty great, too. Maybe it's time for you, yes, you, to finally stock up on all things Retro Cocktail Hour. You'll find apparel, barware, and lots more at our online store. To find it, just go to retrococktail.org and click on Store. Music by Johnny Richards with a tune for a movie called Kiss Her Goodbye on the Retro Cocktail Hour. The movie was shot in Havana just as Castro's rebels were overthrowing the government. When Castro took over, the film was seen, and for a while it looked like it might never get released. It did finally come out in 1959. Well, hey, look at that. We have used up almost all the time they'll let us have for this round of the Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Hit me up on social media, or you can get me at host@retrococktail.org. We'll leave you now with a tune by Bob Mercy from an album called Jazz from Great TV Shows. Club Cool on the Retro Cocktail Hour and KPR. Thank you. From the University of Kansas, KPRs KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Oldsburg Junction City, and KANQ Chanute. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org. Hi, it's Daryl Brogdon. The Retro Cocktail Hour turns 30 this year, and we're throwing a bunch of parties to celebrate. On February 27th and 28th, hope you'll join us for two nights of live music, including Exotica Cocktail. And all the way from L.A., the band called Nutty.
Acting nutty, but I don't know why. Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Tickets for everything are on sale right now. Find the complete event schedule at kansaspublicradio.org. Hi, it's Daryl Brogdon. The Retro Cocktail Hour turns 30 this year, and we're throwing a bunch of parties to celebrate. On February 27th and 28th, hope you'll join us for two nights of live music, including Exotica Cocktail. And all the way from L.A., the band called Nutty.
Acting nutty, but I don't know why. Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Tickets for everything are on sale right now. Find the complete event schedule at kansaspublicradio.org.
I'm Maria Lopez. Now here's your weather forecast for the KPR listening area. It's 37 and cloudy. Wind is from the west northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight clear with a low in the low teens. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the upper 20s. Tomorrow night clear with a low in the mid teens. It's 37 and cloudy. Stay tuned for more KPR weather for Northeast Kansas.
Welcome to Live at Green Lady Lounge, featuring live jazz at one of Kansas City's finest venues, located on Grand Boulevard in downtown KC. I'm Daryl Brogdon, and today we've got a return appearance by a new band on the Kansas City jazz scene, Stanley Sheldon's Rhythm Republic. Bassist Stanley Sheldon not only plays Latin jazz, but he's done graduate-level research on the 19th-century slave societies in Latin America and their role in shaping Afro-Cuban music traditions. The band also features trumpeter Stan Kessler, Brian Ward at the piano, Gary Cardilli at the congas, and drummer John Kizillermutt. Let's begin with a tune by Charlie Otwell, the longtime music director and pianist for the great Pancho Sanchez. This is Peruchin, named for a famous Cuban pianist. Thank you.
Thank you. These are a couple of Chucho Valdez arrangements we're doing up here. That was called Bebo, his dad's nickname. Bebo Valdez.